Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger. Fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
We begin today with some good news, and I guess this time of year, any sports news is good news, just given how weird it is not to have a whole lot of sports going on. But for Georgia fans who live in the city of Atlanta or the state of Georgia, they are probably pretty excited today to find out that the Atlanta Falcons have agreed to terms on a one-year contract with Todd Gurley. I thought the Falcons' official Twitter account did a nice job of announcing this by highlighting all the Twitter requests they've gotten from presumably a lot of Georgia fans saying, why don't you guys sign Todd Gurley? Why don't you bring Gurley in? And they say, okay, we've essentially done what you've asked for. So kind of a nice thing to see here. And, you know, ultimately, I guess my message to Georgia fans on this is if you live in Georgia, you know, if you're near the city of Atlanta at all, if you've ever cared in the past about the Georgia players who have or haven't made their way to Atlanta to play for the Falcons, then I think it'd be nice to sort of incentivize more of this from the Falcons in the future. Because I do think, Gurley, he's only 25 years old. I know he's had some injuries and some things along those lines. But I mean, this is still a guy that can have some good football ahead of him. And you know, on a relatively, you know, short, cheap deal for the Falcons, this could be kind of a nice windfall in terms of on-field production. But it also could have a huge impact off the field in terms of tickets potentially sold, jerseys being sold, things along those lines. And far be it from me to tell you what you to do with your discretionary income, especially during a time in which our economy has sort of suddenly fallen into hard times. You know, not everyone has as much money to toss around as they used to. But if you plan on spending some money this upcoming fall, especially on professional football, maybe buying that Falcons gear, maybe buying that Falcons ticket as a way of showing that you're happy about Gurley being in Atlanta, I think that's probably in a roundabout way a pretty good way to incentivize some of this for the future. And it was interesting this morning, as I record this on a Friday, I was watching the show, are you familiar with Get Up on ESPN? It's Mike Greenberg and a whole host of folks that are on there with him. And, you know, you bring in the Adam Schefters and the people like that. And there's just a lot of chatter about Gurley's UGA connection. It's the kind of thing I heard Schefter bring up, I think, more than once of, well, this will be a familiar homecoming for Gurley because he understands the state. He's not obviously not from Georgia. He's from North Carolina. But, you know, having played here at UGA, Schefter kind of approached that as a positive in terms of him coming to Atlanta. And it really just, I think, accentuates and highlights, you know, the way in which that Gurley has been a really good brand builder for Georgia since he's left. Playing for the Rams in kind of a cool city like Los Angeles, Gurley has had the look, the feel of a celebrity. He has kind of a cool look to him. And I mean, I think that, you know, for instance, Kendall Milton has cited Gurley as being influential in his decision to be interested in Georgia. And I think, you know, seeing Gurley's name dominate the headlines here today, it's just sort of another example of how the Gurley connection to UGA has done UGA pretty well. It was obviously true last year when in Atlanta in the Super Bowl, the Rams met the Patriots and the Patriots had Sony Michel and Gurley was there with Los Angeles, and that whole notion of Georgia wanting to build itself up as running back UU when you've got multiple running backs on both teams in the Super Bowl, it just becomes a lot easier to make that claim. And, you know, Gurley was repping Georgia even back during that Super Bowl week in Atlanta this past year. I had a chance to catch up with Todd briefly and be a part of a little bit of a press conference with him. Our buddy D. Orlando Ledbetter from the AJC had a chance to do the same. And in the midst of all of that, the one thing that D. Led brought up was the fact that Gurley was wearing that UGA gear during the interview process. And, well, this is what that exchange sounded like last January in Atlanta.
Georgia sweater on there. You and Sony meeting up again in the Super Bowl after, you know, being together for that 1 year in 2014.
That's cool. That's cool. We on the other side, though, so we don't talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind that from back then saying, hey, yeah, Sony's my friend and we're cool with each other, but for now we're going to be opponents here in the Super Bowl, and who wouldn't want to feel that way? But the fact that that Gurley's doing all this while wearing the George G is just kind of an example of kind of how he's rep for UGA in the past. I know many of you probably saw the tweet from Mark Richt celebrating the fact that Gurley's on his way to Atlanta and saying that Richt was excited about cheering on the Falcons now that Gurley was going to be playing for the team. I think that Richt is probably a stand-in for a lot of Georgia fans. fans who I think right now feel very much the same way. It's just a really good thing to be able to see. So on this time in which there's not a whole lot of sports news, I think this is good sports news. Georgia fans just like Gurley. You know, Gurley's just incredibly popular. I think one of the most popular players of the 21st century at Georgia is probably Todd Gurley. And if you want the Falcons to pursue more guys like this, and it's not commercial for the organization, by the way, this is just my own personal opinion. But if you want Atlanta to pursue more guys like this in the future, then incentivizing them to do so is probably a pretty good idea. When those new Falcons jerseys come out in April, buying yourself a Gurley one, buying some of those tickets, going and cheering on this team, whether they're good or not, they are more fun because Gurley plays for them, and I think a lot of Georgia fans are happy to see that here today. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Kroger, and we're glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us today. Now, I say that all the time. Our show's a little different right now. We're still doing the show on Facebook and YouTube, or at least a version of the show. It's pretty much me taking a lot of your comments. So if you're a podcast listener and you're maybe looking for more things to occupy yourself during what may be a little bit of an unusual time for you, we're still there on Facebook. We're still there on YouTube. A lot of interaction. Some of you have asked on Twitter, can you see the growth of the beard? I am growing a beard right now during this kind of social distancing time. Eventually, I may share a photo with that on Twitter or something like that. But for now, I am kind of chronicling the process of that. And I say that obviously in jest. But I am chronicling that process on the video version of our show, which for now is not really like the podcast because of just it's just a lot easier to technically do the podcast from home than it is to do a video show that sounds like the podcast from home, if that makes sense. So you can check that out, and we'd love to have you do so as a part of Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger here today. I'll also remind you this, when it comes to Kroger, new store hours for them right now. Store opening at 8 a.m. at the moment. That's a way of making sure the shelves get stocked and make sure everything is clean and sanitized. I think it's great that Kroger's working so hard to do all that kind of stuff for us. We need them right now. They've stepped up in a huge way. And that new opening hour of 8 a.m. makes it easier to do that. Fuel center hours 5 to 9 right now for the moment. Also, for many of you who've kind of had a little bit different kind of work schedule hit you as of late, you know, maybe you've lost work because of the economic downturn associated with this response to the coronavirus pandemic. The good news is Kroger is looking to hire some seasonal employees. You can go to Kroger.com and find out more about that. So if you need work right now, Kroger might be able to provide that for you. I hope that you will check that out. Let me also give you a heads up on this. As I'm recording this on a Friday morning, I will let you know that this evening at 5 p.m., we're going to do a Dog Nation social hour at the Forum, which is totally free message board, forum.dognation.com. Myself, Connor Riley, Jeff Sintel, Mike Griffith, just kind of kicking around some topics and just generally speaking, having a good time today, starting at 5 p.m. on the Dog Nation Forum. So if you're looking to have a good time yourself here on a Friday afternoon, I would love to have you there and see you there for that coming up at 5 p.m. today. Something else that's ongoing at Dog Nation right now, and I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about this. I'm going to bring on Connor Riley as a guest in a moment. And as a way of setting up that conversation, let me point out something that Connor's doing, which I think is really fun, on the Dog Nation Twitter feed. Just at Dog Nation on Twitter, you can go and find this. Connor's put together a bracket of the top moments thus far of the Kirby Smart era. Now, the big elephant in the room on a discussion like this is, and when Connor joins us, I'm going to get more into this with him, the Sony Michel walk-off touchdown to win the Rose Bowl is such a significant moment. It's hard to come up with something that's better than that, right? It's just hard to do. That's just such a big, big moment. It's almost a perfect sports moment in a lot of ways. And if we're really being as, I guess, objective as we can be, eclipsing that's not easy. So I've been kind of thinking about, well, what beyond that really matters to me? And what beyond that is something that I would vote for if I made it impossible to vote for the Sony Michel Rose Bowl touchdown. And I guess the one thing I've arrived at is I don't have to stretch my imagination too much to come up with something that is as important to me. And frankly, when I think about my own fond memories, something that is as fond for me as that Rose Bowl touchdown was. For me, it's Dog Nation Invasion, the original one, to South Bend in 2017. I just think it was a huge message of what the Georgia program is, how big its borders extend, and how intense the love for dog fans really is. That moment, Dog Nation Invasion in South Bend, I think was a really good example of that. And let me kind of go back in time here for a moment and give you some of the things that Kirby Smart said in the immediate aftermath of that. Obviously, the fans were a huge story that day, a big part of what went down, even contributing to the UGA win. Here was Kirby Smart talking about that.
I'll tell you what I'm proud of. I'm proud of our fans. proud of the fact they came out and tons of them were here. The video shots I saw from Chicago before the game and the takeover when we got here, you know, that played a role in this game. That we never felt like it was so much of a road game. I mean, there was time our quarterback was able to go on his own cadence, which you don't usually get to do on the road. Definitely don't get to do on the road in the SEC. Fan base don't let you do that. We were able to go on ours, and I think a lot of it had to do with the red and black that was in the stadium.
So Kirby there says it's not just a good show. It didn't just look good on TV. In terms of making it easier for Georgia to win that pivotal road game, the fans played a role in doing so. And by the way, that wasn't the only thing that Smart said about the fans. Here is more of Kirby on the impact, the presence of UGA fans in South Bend.
You know, this atmosphere tonight was incredible. I thought for college football, you think about our players and our fan base. This will be a game they talk about for a long time, a special trip for our players to end it the right way and for our fan base to come out. You know, I want to say thanks to the fans because they were really behind us and backed us, and I thought it was a big momentum swing in the game.
I mean, listen, I think for a lot of us, that was a really poignant moment. First of all, for those of you who are lucky enough to be a part of it, and tens upon tens of thousands of you were, but if you were lucky enough to be a part of it, I just think it's as fun as it ever gets, right? I mean, to be in Wrigley Field that Friday night and hear the Go Dawgs Sic'em cheers inside the friendly confines and, you know, all the crazy stuff like that. It was just almost surreal. Like, you just couldn't believe this was happening in real life. It's just an incredibly fun memory. Chicago is a great city to visit. South Bend is a beautiful campus. It's just really fun. But I think it also demonstrated, and I'm going to talk more to Connor about this in a moment, I think it just demonstrates how big Georgia fans are. You know, in retrospect, it's sort of easy to lump this into what was just a special season for Georgia and sort of capturing some magic and just kind of, you know, lightning in a bottle maybe. But the honest truth is this trip for many people was planned well before they ever knew that Georgia would be as good as it turned out to be in 2017. If anything, I think it's symbolic of the insatiable hunger that existed and still exists on the part of Georgia fans and what Smart was stepping into as Georgia coach. You know, I've always been the believer that, and this is not to disrespect the program itself, but in terms of how Georgia is viewed, the fan performance has kind of outpaced the on-field performance for Georgia for a long time. And in 2017, the way that it showed up to support its team there in South Bend was really another example of that. You know, Georgia's always been one of the big fan base when it comes to scarfing up apparel, when it comes to donating money for tickets, when it comes to prices on the secondary market, when it comes to really anything about measuring the intensity of a fan base. Georgia's always done really well with that. And, you know, to see this go down in 2017, September this way, when Georgia was still at that point in time, I mean, we had no idea this team was going to go on to even win the SEC East, much less win the SEC and go to the college football playoff and then win a thrilling Rose Bowl. We didn't know any of that back then. And yet Georgia fans were still ready to support their team and incredibly expensive. I mean, remember how expensive the plane tickets were and how hard it was to find a plane ticket and hotel accommodations were not cheap. The game tickets themselves were just exorbitant, astronomical prices. And yet Georgia fans were willing to pay it because there's really no bar, no financial threshold that Georgia fans seemingly aren't willing to cross to support their team. And that was really an example of that for me in 2017. So when I think about some happy memories of the Kirby Smart era, that's really very high on my list. And it's hard to beat the Rose Bowl. It's hard to be better than that. It's hard to be better than some of those recent moments in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party against Florida. I'll certainly acknowledge that as a Gator hater. Those are always going to be fun for me. But there is just something about that trip to Notre Dame in 2017 that was really, really special. So here's what I hope you'll do. I hope you'll check out Dog Nation on Twitter, at Dog Nation. I hope you'll vote on your own top moments thus far in the Smart Era. Then you can follow along and see how fellow Georgia fans have voted for this at DogNation.com. We'll be updating those results pretty regularly. And we'll talk to Connor Riley about that coming up in just a moment. Also, there's another clip on Smart in this moment that I'm going to play for you in a moment. I don't have enough time to do that right now because I need to get the Connor Riley interview going. But we'll hear again from Smart on this topic before we're done on the show as we just kind of reminisce about my own personal, very happy memory from the Smart era. I'll see you this evening at 5 p.m. at the Forum at forum.dognation.com for our Dog Nation Social Hour. I hope you'll participate with me on that, along with Mike Griffith and Jeff Sintel and Connor Riley as well. We've got some news here today on Anthony Ant-Man Edwards. Probably not unexpected news, but we'll cover that in the the program. I'm going to tell a really funny story later on. At least I think it's funny. I hope you'll think it's funny as well. Something that Tennessee coach Jeremy Pruitt has bragged about recently that he might not have as much grounds to brag about anymore. Stay with us to learn more about that here coming up on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. But for now, for more on the bracket of the top moments thus far in the Smart era, and just generally speaking, a fun way to kind of relax and talk some college football here on a Friday, let's speak to Connor Riley here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, it's good to have Connor Riley here from DogNation.com, who's always pumping out good content to the side, and even some more fun stuff this week with the bracket, the field of big moments in the Kirby Smart era for folks to vote on at the Dog Nation Twitter page. We'll no doubt talk a lot about that and a whole lot more here. Connor, thanks for spending some time with us on a different version of our program, but nonetheless, it's good to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, BA. Wish we could be in studio together, but this will have to do for the time being.
Yeah, maybe before September we'll get a chance to do that, I hope.
God, I hope so.
Let's talk a little bit about the bracket you put together. I think it's really fun. You know, I think anything like this, there's a huge challenge because from Georgia's standpoint, when you look at the moments in the Kirby Smart era, that Sony Michel touchdown in the Rose Bowl is obviously such a big, big moment and such a, I think, thing that everybody has kind of cherished memories of, that it's kind of hard to find something that eclipses that. So I was hoping we could spend some time talking about a few of those others. So I guess just kind of give me your general thoughts on putting the bracket together, you know, kind of the ones that sort of stood out to you as you were kind of putting them in there with the various seeds.
Yeah, so, I mean, the Sony Michel one is the obvious favorite, number one seed, runaway, you know, favorite to win it all. I thought the DeAndre Swift touchdown run in the Auburn game, I think that's been also a really great one just because of what it meant, you know, winning the SEC, getting revenge of sorts on Auburn after what happened earlier in that season. I'm trying to think off the top of my head some of the other ones. You know, moments I was actually there for in person, the Notre Dame home game in 2019, I thought that was just an incredible atmosphere, incredible moment, I think, for the program to really show off, you know, all that it potentially could be. I think the number one seed that I had in 2018, them winning at Kentucky to win the SEC East, I know that might not register a whole lot just given they've won the SEC East so often, but in talking to some of the players with that team, winning that game and the way they did, you know, getting out to a 28-3 lead and really just snuffing out what was a really good and really talented Kentucky team, I think is something that deserves to be celebrated a little bit. And, you know, I figured there was going to be one moment that I knew I would forget or not include. And about noon yesterday, Jeff Sintel texted me, "Hey, did you forget about 93 K Day, the spring game before Kirby's first season?" And I did. And, you know, that probably should have been in the tournament. Probably should have been a high seed in the 2016 region. But all in all, there were a lot to choose from. And, you know, if I were to do this differently and just include, I think, the top 32 moments from Smart's time, there's probably a lot more 2017 moments in there. You know, Lorenzo Carter's blocking the field goal, Davin Bellamy's strip sack against Notre Dame. There's a whole lot more you could really put in there.
I'll remind folks they can vote on these at DogNation.com. I'm sorry, the Dog Nation Twitter feed. You can check on the results at DogNation.com, but go to Dog Nation on Twitter and you can cast your vote on this. And yeah, I mean, anytime you try to put a list like this together, it's going to be exhaustive and it's easy to leave something out. I do think your point about the Kentucky game in 2018 is a good one, though, because Kentucky's not a traditional Georgia rival, even though they play every year. And it's not a team that we think of as being particularly, I guess, you know, prestigious in terms of getting a win against it. But that team finished in the top 15. So Georgia goes up there and plays them for the SEC East, wins that day in, you know, pretty impressive fashion. But it's not like Kentucky fell apart after that. I think they still won the bowl game and finished in the top 15 of the season, or the top 15 in the rankings to close out the season. So to think about, you know, going on the road like that, dominating an opponent that way in sort of classic Kirby Smart fashion, really good running game, really good defense, also some nice moments from J.J. Holloman in that game as well. You know, that was, I think you're absolutely right to say, an underrated performance in the Smart era, because if you're looking at you know, all these dumb metrics that ESPN talks about, like game control and things like that. Against a pretty good team, Georgia really went out and asserted itself pretty well.
Yeah, I think that game is on the very short list for best DeAndre Swift games. He had two just mesmerizing touchdown runs in that game. They ran for over 300 yards on a front seven that featured multiple NFL players, including Josh Allen, who was a top 10 pick. And, you know, it kind of will get lost to history, but Lamont Geyer got hurt in that game, and Trey Hill had to move over to center, and he filled in pretty well, except for, you know, he had a couple of botched snaps in that game. But that line ran – they ran for over 300 yards in that game against a really stout, really good Kentucky defense. And, you know, it will get lost to history because of, I think, how that season ended, both losing in the Sugar Bowl and then obviously losing to Alabama, especially in the fashion that they did in the SEC championship game. But that was a very signature win for Kirby Smart's program, especially just because that was an SEC East championship game. If Kentucky had found a way to win that game, they're going to Atlanta. So for Georgia to really, A, win that game and to win it, I think, in the dominating fashion that they did, said a whole lot about that 2018 team.
Let me make a case for a couple of other moments here, including the one that, just as a way of being a contrarian and going against the Rose Bowl touchdown, I would probably tout. I'll get to that in a moment. But there are a couple of things against Florida on there. Lawrence Cager's performance this past year, what Jake Fromm has done against the Gators during his career. And I don't think that should be glossed over. And by the way, you know, the flea flicker against Mississippi State in 2017 now takes on, I guess, added meaning because of what Mullen has come to mean for Georgia fans as a bit of a nemesis. All of a sudden, that flea flicker even seems bigger in retrospect against Mississippi State in 2017. But all those moments, whether they come against Mullen or come against Florida in particular, you know, I don't think that Georgia fans should be quick to gloss over that kind of stuff in terms of celebrating what has happened thus far during the Smart era. I've talked about this on the show a little bit this week, Connor, that I get Georgia fans' insatiable hunger to finally taste a national championship. I understand all of that. I think eventually that's going to come. And along the way, I think it's also important to celebrate the small wins as well. And you and I have been in Jacksonville together the last couple of years. And I was lucky to be there in 2017 as well. To see Georgia kind of thumping Florida in that spot when this game really means a lot and Florida fans feel like they're about to, you know, kind of get back on the national stage again. I hope Georgia fans appreciate that for what it is. That's not a meager accomplishment. That's making the life of a Florida fan kind of miserable right now, making the life of the Gators themselves kind of miserable that Georgia's enjoying that success in the cocktail party. And I'm glad to see those moments represented on your bracket. And I hope Georgia fans themselves, whether they vote for it or not, I hope they take some time to appreciate what that really has been like the last couple of years.
Right, and I think the reason I have those sort of seated where they are is just because there's not really a specific play or moment that necessarily stands out from those games, but I think in a totality they do mean a lot. And knowing the results, the Jeremiah Heilman two touchdowns that essentially represents the 2018 game and Fromm's performance in the 2019 game, both those won pretty convincingly. So I do think that those Florida wins, and really because I think of the personal rivalry between Kirby Smart and Dan Mullen, any sort of win over Florida is still, I think, going to mean a lot to Georgia and to this fan base. I think from a wider perception, sometimes it does seem like that Florida game might get lost a little bit in the weeds of trying to win a national championship. But the week of and the week after, and you do a better job of explaining this than anyone, that Florida game means more than anything, than any Alabama game I think will ever mean to Georgia,
you know,
and Georgia fans.
Yeah, I think that's right. So if I'm going to tout something other than Sony and the Rose Bowl to win the whole thing, my answer may surprise you on this, because I thought about a lot of these moments. And the one that I still have personally just great memories of, and maybe even as significant in my mind as the Rose Bowl, is what happened in South Bend in 2017. I was lucky enough to be there, and I've told this story before, and this is not a story about me. Hopefully it's a story about the experience. But, you know, there's Notre Dame Stadium is incredibly nice. They have what's almost like the coolest rooftop bar you've ever seen as an extension of the press box that the press is able to kind of walk out on and kind of just, you know, look over the community of South Bend and the stadium. And I happened to go out there in time for the light up when the Redcoats played, the Krypton theme and the cell phone lights came out. And to me, that moment just capsulized how many Georgia fans were there, how beautiful it was to see that much red and black in that stadium. And, Connor, what makes that additionally poignant for me is that I know that it kind of got treated as, well, this is how fired up Georgia fans are for the start of the Kirby Smart era. But the truth is, when a lot of those Georgia fans were making those travel plans for South Bend, this is coming in the midst of a 2016 season that was anything but stellar, and Georgia was coming off only an 8-win season prior to that. This was Georgia fans supporting their team more so than being, you know, kind of fully baptized into the cult of Kirby Smart there at that point in time. But I think it showed just how robust the fan base can be and how much they long to support their team in kind of fun and unique ways. And really everything that's happened since then has, to me, kind of built off of what was demonstrated in South Bend in 2017. So I know it may not seem as big of a win like some of the postseason games that we're going to talk about, but in terms of memories that stick out in my mind, just experiencing that moment in South Bend in 2017 is still as prominent for me as anything else that's happened under Smart.
Yeah, and the reason I titled it, you know, Takeover of Notre Dame, more so than highlighting Terry Godwin's incredible catch or Gavin Bellamy's strip sack to sort of win the game there, is I think it was really the whole weekend. And to your point, anyone that says they went into that weekend knowing where Georgia's season was going to end, it was just absolutely full of themselves. But I think in the moment and seeing everything and taking everything in, you know, that Monday, you could have started to realistically say for yourself, I think Kirby Smart can do something special here, just given all that both his team and I think the Georgia fan base showed that weekend. And I do think those two are going to meet up at some point in this tournament. And while obviously the Sony, just because of, you know, I think the way that game was played and the Rose Bowl and the setting and all, will probably win. But in terms of single weekends and the effect it has had on the Georgia program, I don't necessarily think that there has been one more impactful than that Notre Dame weekend was.
Yeah, I just have such fond memories of it. And, you know, we keep coming back to the thing about the Sony thing just being hard to beat in a bracket like this. I think you can make a case that, now I know that it doesn't lead to a national championship, so maybe that's the one blemish to it, but in terms of everything else, really high-value marquee opponent, probably the single best venue in all of college football. I think there's a pretty good chance that's true. You know, the player that was like 100% approval rating, like super popular fan favorite. You know, the word perfect is not an easy word to use, but there's a chance Sonny Michel winning the Rose Bowl with a touchdown against Oklahoma and a villainous quarterback like Baker Mayfield, there's a chance that's a perfect moment.
Yeah, it's hard. Like, the only way it could have been better is if it was for the national championship game.
Yeah.
Or for the actual national championship. But, again, like you say, Sony, it was the best game of his life. It is still, even in his NFL career to date, the best game of his life. It was a huge comeback. Weirdly enough, it was out of a wild dog formation where, so with all the issues Kirby Smart has had with quarterbacks, not issues, but, you know, the perception about them, it is funny that sort of the signature play of his tenure right now started with a running back taking a snap and scoring a 25-yard touchdown. But I think you really sum it up really well, where it was just everything sort of coming together, this great comeback, perfect venue, great call. There were real stakes there. It was Georgia's first national championship appearance in, I think, like 35 years. So everything sort of came together for this perfect moment, which is just something in the messiness of sports you just so rarely see. And I think Georgia fans really and still do appreciate everything that was associated with that moment.
A little bit of time left. Let me squeeze in one more topic here. We started our show today by talking about Todd Gurley being signed by the Falcons. And this is not an NFL show, but I was watching Get Up this morning on ESPN, and many times his connection to UGA was mentioned. Adam Schefter mentioned it a couple of times when he was being interviewed. So there is a pretty significant UGA component to the story. And I guess, Connor, my encouragement for UGA fans is, you know, if you live in the state of Georgia, I think you ought to celebrate the fact that Gurley is with the Falcons. I think that you ought to support Atlanta for having made this move, because I think if you're a sports fan, you want to incentivize the Falcons to do more things like this, bringing a popular fan favorite former UGA guy. You know, I'm not telling you have to buy a jersey or you have to buy a ticket, but if you do buy a jersey and if you do buy a ticket, it'd be a good way for the Falcons to know that moves like this in the future make some financial sense, as in addition to maybe making some sense on the field too.
Yeah, sometimes in life, life just gives you layups. And
yeah.
while you might want to take a three-pointer or you might want to slow it down and kick it back out and restart the offense, sometimes in life you just have to take the layup, and I think that's what the situation is for all parties involved. Gurley needed a team. Money, I don't think, was a very big motivating factor for him, given that he was very well compensated for his time at the Rams. The Falcons had a need at running back, and this is upcoming season is going to be very difficult for them, just given sort of where they are and the decision to keep Dan Quinn after this trying last season. They've gone, I think, 7-9 in back-to-back years, and they really need to make the playoffs this year. And if things go well for both parties involved, it's going to help both sides out quite a bit. And, you know, the risk, if it doesn't work out, the risk was probably going to be there anyway for both sides. So, in my opinion, it's a low-risk move. There's a ton of upside with it. It gets the fan base motivated, even without, I think, the current state of affairs that we are all living in. I think, you know, if it were just regular business as usual and this movement announced, it'd be met with the same fanfare because Gurley is still, of the modern Georgia football players, I believe he's still the most popular, still the most well-liked, certainly the most recognizable, and to now have him playing for a franchise that the last Georgia player they drafted was Akeem Dent back in 2011, for a franchise that, you know, Georgia still, the Falcons are still very much a local franchise, but for them to not really have any connection at all to the state's most popular football team, I think this will encourage more people to be interested in watch the Falcons just because the obvious sort of connection there with Gurley.
Yeah, I hope that's true. Make sure you check out Dog Nation on Twitter to vote on the top moments in the Kirby Smart era. Really fun bracket concept that Connor's put together. Also, you can track those results at DogNation.com. And then today, 5 p.m. here on this Friday, we'll be in the Dog Nation Forum for social hour. Connor, Jeff, Mike, me, the whole Dog Nation team, kind of kicking around some fun topics. We hope you'll join us on that. And the great news is the Dog Nation Forum is always free. It's forum.dognation.com. Connor, thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. And we'll look forward to chatting with you a little bit later on today.
Yep. Thanks, Ben.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really good to be able to talk to Connor Riley there and just kind of maintain a sense of normalcy on this show, at least on the podcast version of this. Conversations like that are fun, and I think they help take our mind off of some of the weird things that are happening in the world right now. So I'm glad to be able to do that as a part of our program here today. I also want to remind you about our good friends at Appella Window and Door and a great deal they have for you right now. They can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. Of course, we know that, but the savings really have never been better. You can currently replace all of your windows for as low as $78 a month, or you can get 40% off qualifying installations through April the 23rd. Of course, Pella offers the best lifetime warranty, top-of-the-line equipment, and unparalleled expertise. They're also family-owned. You know, it's a national company, but they have a locally-owned branch, family-owned right here in Georgia, so you get great service around that as well. And there are a couple of very easy ways to get in touch with them. You can go to the website, PellaBranch.com. That's PellaBranch.com. Or you can give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom at 404-445-2979. That's 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. All right, so let's do a couple of SEC Through stories here for a moment. I want to see if I can try to sum this up. I think this is pretty funny. So Jeremy Pruitt, at one point in time during the offseason, was really bragging about something, and that was the fact that Tennessee had apparently held on to its strength and conditioning coach, Craig Fitzgerald, in keeping him from going to the NFL. Let me give you the quote here specifically that was attributed to Pruitt not all that long ago about his strength guy, Fitzgerald. He says, "I can't say enough about Craig and his guys, what they've done over the last 3 years. Our guys continue to get bigger, stronger. They develop discipline, and they have a lot of mental toughness." Pruitt goes on to say that in the offseason, Craig's a guy that's in high demand. That's no secret. There have been several jobs that have been open across our league, and Craig was the first guy that they called. He decided to stay here. He's in demand because he's good at what he does. So the obvious, you know, takeaway there is that Alabama, who needed a strength and conditioning coach because Scott Cochran left to go be special teams coach at Georgia, according to Pruitt's insinuation, they reached out about Fitzgerald, and Tennessee was able to beat back Alabama and keep them from stealing his strength and conditioning coach. There's only one problem with that, though. According to Patrick Brown of Goldfalls 247, the website, that after all the bragging about keeping Fitzgerald from taking the Alabama job, apparently Fitzgerald's now expected to leave Tennessee to go take the job working with the strength and conditioning program for the New York Giants. So isn't that kind of a funny twist and turn? This was kind of hailed around Knoxville as one of the big off-season wins for Tennessee, and ends up being, I guess, not much of a win at all. Fitzgerald not staying with the Vols, going to take the New York Giants job instead. So Fitzgerald actually was, I think, the second highest paid strength and conditioning coach in the country. There aren't a ton of guys in that spot making more than Scott Sinclair makes at Georgia. Fitzgerald was one of those guys, and apparently that's not enough money to keep him in the college game. Reports out there from 24/7 Sports that he's on his way to the New York Giants. This is not really an SEC story, but it is something I kind of wanted to make mention of. Our buddy the Bear, Chris Felica from ESPN, had a pretty interesting tweet the other day looking at some interesting college football statistics. Now, one of the things I'm a big believer in is, I'm not a math expert or anything like that, but sometimes what seems like a good thing, mathematically speaking, statistically speaking, ends up maybe not being quite as good as you think it should be. You know, a lot of times maybe in old school football thinking, we would treat teams who win close games as kind of knowing how to get it done, knowing how to pull out the win late, knowing how to close out games well. But over the course of the long haul, statistically, that's not always borne out as being true. What we really see is a lot of close losses one year usually works out to the tune of more close wins the following year. And if you have a lot of close wins in a given year, well, that can usually mean bad news for you in future seasons. That over the course of a multitude of years, the dispersion of close wins compared to close losses is going to relatively even itself out. And over the course of time, games decided by a score or less, well, you're going to do about 50-50 on those. So keep that in mind for one of the teams that is kind of thought to be one of the top national competitors along with Georgia for spot in the college football playoff. What the Bear Chris Felica lets us know on Twitter is, and then he tweeted this a couple of days ago, that the most wins by 7 points or fewer last year, so a touchdown or less from a season ago. Minnesota 6-1 in that regard, easy to kind of fade the Golden Gophers moving forward because of that. Pitt was 6-3. Toledo was 5-1. You don't care about that. Hawaii was 5-1. You don't care about that. Nevada was 5-1. You don't care about that. Miami of Ohio was 5-0 in those games, and Arizona State was 5-3. But here's the one that you'll probably find to be pretty interesting. In games decided by a touchdown or less, Oklahoma was 5-1 last season. First of all, I guess I didn't quite remember them playing that many close games, but apparently they played more than I realized. And a lot of you know that I spent a lot of the offseason last year kind of touting Jalen Hurts as maybe someone that was due to have not the best season there for the Sooners. Ultimately, that probably didn't work out as poorly as I probably thought it would. But at the same time, you know, if you go back and look a little deeper at the stats, it's not like Hurts necessarily had a great year at Oklahoma, especially when it comes to throwing the football. And now, in the absence of Jalen Hurts, it's the start of the Spencer Rattler era. And, well, I just think, generally speaking, a little bit of maybe well-placed concern about if this Oklahoma team, who's gotten the benefit of the doubt for the college football playoff now the last couple of years, if this is the still same kind of program moving forward. You know, I talked yesterday in this spot on the program about that fictitious Field of 64 college football tournament that ESPN wrote up. You know, relatively harmless, relatively unimportant, but you know, I think reading through those games and kind of imagining what it would be like if those games were played in real life, I think one of the things that you're kind of left with there is that, you know, Oklahoma is still, at least on paper, one of the teams that is supposed to be, you know, among those main national contenders. But with no more big-time transfer quarterback the way that Hurts was, the way that Kyler Murray was, with, you know, the loss of Trey Sermon, who's announced that he's leaving the program as a running back, an Oklahoma defense that's still not really bringing a whole lot to the table, 2 years in a row of being absolutely handled, I mean, just manhandled in the playoff by SEC teams. And if you add Georgia, a third straight year of losing to an SEC team in the college football playoff, I think we may be looking at the potential of a pretty serious regression from Oklahoma, not quite what they have been. Now, does Texas benefit from that, or does the Big 12 just completely disappear from the playoff scene? It remains to be seen on that, but if you're thinking about national contenders, who's up, who's down, I believe I might put the Sooners in the category of being a bit down for this upcoming season, and we'll certainly see if that bears out to be true, and for now, we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger, I want to turn our attention back to the topic that we were on near the beginning of the show. I was talking about Connor Riley's his own bracket that you can be a part of at the Dog Nation Twitter feed, at Dog Nation on Twitter, and those top moments thus far from the Kirby Smart era. And I kind of made my case near the beginning of the show for why I really felt like that the original Dog Nation invasion going into South Bend, taking over that stadium the way that Georgia did, is the kind of thing that really my memory is just as fond as anything that's happened thus far in the Kirby Smart era. And I was playing some of the audio from Smart from that time, and I wanted to give you another clip on this because I thought that Smart was asked a question that I think seems more relevant maybe even now than it did when it was initially asked it. You know, you got 40, 50,000 Georgia fans there in South Bend. You got this late win by Georgia, Davin Bellamy sack that preserves the victory, game-winning field goal by Rodrigo Blankenship, setting off a string of wins that came after that against Mississippi State with the flea flicker play, shutout against Tennessee, near shutout against Florida, and lo and behold, Georgia goes on to win the SEC. So at the time there in South Bend, not knowing that everything else that would occur after this, at the time, Kirby Smart was asked, was that a program-changing win? And here's what Kirby Smart had to say about that.
I definitely think for our fan base, it seems that way. For our team, we're 2-0. The next game, yeah, it's Notre Dame. Notre Dame's a great program. I got a lot of respect for them. And they got a good football team, okay? They're better than they were last year, and we're better than we were last year because both teams are better. I can promise you that because I watched a lot of their tape in the offseason. But program builder, you know, I don't know if you have that. I think the biggest thing is focusing on next week. Can we get better?
I mean, listen, first of all, that's as Kirby Smart as you get with the answer on that. But for him to say, was it a program builder? I don't know. We're going to keep trying to get better. After all that has been said and done, it is fun to think about just how much better that Georgia got each and every week after that game, ultimately culminating in a trip to the college football playoff. Who could have seen it coming back then? And yet, that's exactly what happened in the aftermath of that initial Dog Nation invasion in South Bend. So I will let you know, by the way, as we get ready to wrap up here, that there is some news. Mike Griffith, DogNation.com, reporting that Georgia basketball freshman Anthony Edwards has officially declared for the 2020 NBA draft. A source close to the UGA program told Griffith about that. You know, everybody sort of expected that to be true, and there's a chance that Edwards has a chance to be the number one overall pick. So we'll wish him well in his future endeavors. We'll also celebrate Gator Hater Updater, 1,238 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. You have a great weekend, everybody.